Education and Workforce to order. I apologize for the delay in getting started today. Today is the last day to introduce bills. So all of us are running around like absolute crazy people trying to get everything done. And my staff will be interrupting me here at some point to get my signature on a few items. So bear with us as we get that done. First thing I need to do is, if you're here to sign up to testify, that is done over there on the table. If you have a cell phone, please turn it to vibrate so I can't hear it, or anyone else for that matter. Thank you very much. And then the next thing I wanted to do before we get into introducing going into work session is, colleagues, I am, in light of the work we've done, the hearings we've had on education service districts, I am appointing a work group to pursue this matter and bring it back to the committee by March 28th. That is their task. And I've asked Senator Cruz from this committee to serve in that work group, since he cried out, "This cries out for a work group." And he also represents the rural interests. So I think that's a good thing. Senator Ringo will also be on this work group, as well as a number of different parties. That work group will be open, an open meeting, so anyone's free to attend. But we'll keep it somewhat limited to who's going to be on it to be making some decisions. I've also asked Representative Flores from the House to appoint a member of her committee to serve on the work group, since whatever we send out from the Senate will go over to the House. I've not yet heard back from her, but I anticipate we will get some response. And that's kind of where I want to go. And I've talked with Senator Cruz about his charge. We're not going to leave any stone unturned on this ESD discussion. I want a discussion about the 95-5 split on the money. I want a discussion about the governance process we've heard about, as well as drawing the map. And whether there should even be a map. So we have a lot to do, and I appreciate, Senator Cruz, that you're willing to serve on that.
My pleasure, Madam Chair.
And Ms. Taylor will dutifully serve as the administrator to keep you all on task and to organize this meeting. So with that said, I'd like to move into a work session, colleagues. We have a number of very interesting bills to introduce today. Ms. Taylor, you want to talk to us about those? And I should open a work session.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I this morning circulated 7 LC drafts to your offices. LC 846 is a reincarnation of what was Senate Bill 10A last session. LC 1944 comes to us from the Oregon Student Association and is relating to TANF. LC 2116 is related to abuse reporting in the schools. LC 2024 is related to public employee retirement. LC 2025 is related to school administrators. LC 2784 is related to higher education. LC 2449 is related to financial education. And LC 2762 is related to ESDs and is the, I wouldn't say companion bill to Senate Bill 415, but it's a...
It's an alternative bill to Bill 415.
Senator Morissette just presented LC 2762 to the committee, so he might have a couple of comments about that particular LC draft.
Okay, let's do the introductions and then we'll ask for discussion. Senator Starr?
Yes, I move that we submit as committee bills LC 846, LC 1944, LC 2116, LC 2024, LC 2025, LC 2784, LC 2762, and LC 2449.
Thank you. Senator Starr moves LC 846, LC 1944, LC 2116, LC 2024, LC 2025, LC 2784, LC 2449, and LC 2762 for adoption as committee bills. And reminder, colleagues, that your vote on these bills in no way endorses or opposes these measures, simply getting them in as committee bills. Any discussion? Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to mention that LC 2762, which I presented recently, is from both the Governor's Office and the Superintendent of Public Education's Office, Department of Education. So
okay.
That's their bill. Thank you.
Well, nice to have that bill among the rest of the bills we have today. And then, colleagues, LC 2116 is a bill I'm offering forward on child abuse, sex abuse reporting within school districts. And we will definitely be having a hearing on that bill later this month and having quite a discussion about that in our schools. And the other bills are just a number of different things people have asked to have introduced in this committee. So if there's not any further discussion, is there any objection? Hearing none, those bills will be accepted as committee bills. And that takes us to the next thing on our agenda, which would be the informational hearing on Head Start. The folks that we have first up on the agenda would be Superintendent Susan Castillo, Annie Soto with Head Start Lane County, and Donna Schnichter with Harmon County. Kearney County. I can't tell that's a Y. Kearney County. Harmon County. All right. I don't need to open a public hearing. Okay, this is an informational meeting, so take it away. Introduce yourselves and who you represent, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Susan Castillo, the Oregon Superintendent of Public Instruction. And as you just said, with me is Annie Soto, the Executive Director of Lane County Head Start and the President of Oregon Head Start Association, and Donna Schnitker from Harney Head Start. And before you hear the details of Oregon Pre-Kindergarten and Head Start, I'd like to take this opportunity to express my enthusiastic support of these programs. In fact, having children prepared for first grade is one of my priorities. I've been a supporter of early childhood education for a long time and have been serving on the board of Birth to Three for 9 years and know just how important these programs are in helping children get a strong start. Early childhood is a critical time for children to develop the physical, emotional, social, and cognitive skills that they will need to be successful in school and for the rest of their lives. A strong education in these early years gives our children a strong start. Students who are successful in school grow up dreaming of being successful scientists, artists, and yes, even politicians. They grow up believing that they have the power to change the world. Children who get a slower start, who fall behind, and who don't get the help they need, well, their dreams fade until they no longer dream at all. Oregon Pre-Kindergarten is one way to keep those dreams alive for all of our children and to foster new dreams. Oregon Pre-Kindergarten gives those kids who might not have a lot of reason to hope for a bright future a chance to dream of a better tomorrow. So we must ensure that our children are equipped with the basic skills needed to begin school ready to learn. Now, some say that we can't afford to fund pre-kindergarten this legislative session. I say Oregon can't afford not to invest in pre-kindergarten because the cost of failure is too great. According to research studying the costs and benefits of early childhood education more than pays for itself by effecting positive changes that last throughout the child's life. In a study of Michigan children, those who did not attend preschool were twice as likely to later be placed in special education classes and a third less likely to graduate on time. Oregon pre-kindergarten should be a priority of our education budget. Last summer, a report was issued from a bipartisan organization of Oregon law enforcement leaders and crime victims. The report included a number of studies that linked early childhood education with reduced crime, including a study that showed that youngsters who attended preschool were 5 times less likely to become chronic lawbreakers by age 27 than those who did not attend preschool. And that's why investment in high-quality pre-kindergarten programs has been endorsed by the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, as well as national law enforcement organizations such as the National District Attorneys Association and the Fraternal Order of Police. Oregon pre-kindergarten should be a priority of Oregon's public safety budget. Another study out of Chicago showed that government-funded pre-kindergarten programs saved taxpayers, victims, and participants more than $7 for every public dollar invested. And other studies placed this rate much higher, a return of $12 for every $1 invested. And with this rate of return, Oregon pre-kindergarten should be at the center of Oregon's economic development strategy. We have moved from serving 62% of eligible children to 60% of eligible children. The legislature is currently considering a funding level that serves only 54% of eligible children. And I know that our state has great needs right now, and you have many difficult decisions before you. But this is really a case of penny wise and pound foolish. We have solid evidence of what a lot of child advocates and now a growing number of economists are telling us, and that is that pre-kindergarten programs have a big payoff, and that failure to invest in our children moves us backwards, and we will feel the effects far down the road if we do not invest now. So I'm committed to working with all of you and trying to find more money for Oregon pre-kindergarten, and should any money be added to the present budget that's on the table, that money needs to go to the state school fund and Oregon pre-kindergarten. It's that important. So let's fund hope for Oregon children, let's fund the dreams of our children, and let's fund Oregon pre-kindergarten. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Superintendent. We'll hear from Ms. Soto and the rest of the panel, and then we'll have questions.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Senators. I would like to share with you some information, some outcome information.
What's your name, Annie?
Oh, my name is Annie Soto, and I'm Executive Director of Head Start of Lane County.
Thank you.
I'd like to share with you some outcome information that from your Oregon children aged 3 to 5, and this information was we're looking at from last program year. At the beginning of September 03, the beginning of the school year, in the areas of language and literacy, 15% of Head Start children could understand words in children's books, read on their own, use a variety of writing tools, including computers, and using simple sentences to communicate. At the end of that year, in June of 04, over 60% of those children had mastered those skills. In the area of math, in September 03, 10% of children could count to find how many, sort objects by size and shape, and know the difference between morning, afternoon, and evening. At the end of the year, over 45% of those same children have mastered those skills. In the areas of social and emotional, including taking turns, accepting guidance from a familiar adult, and using negotiation to reach a solution, at the beginning of the year, 38% of the children had these skills. At the end of the year, a full 87% of the children had mastered those skills. All skills that are important for children to be ready to learn and ready to enter kindergarten with the appreciation and the understanding of the educational environment that they're going to participate in. In Oregon, we have currently we have 18% cut that's on the table, and that is something that is unacceptable to the association, to the programs. We feel that the children in Head Start make large gains. Brain research shows that children, the younger the children below age 5, the more readily they are able to learn, and so it's a very important time in children's lives. And you know, in Head Start, it's not just the children. children that really learn a lot of skills. The parents learn to advocate for their children, to be involved in a child's education. We know throughout the years one of the indicators of success for a child is the parent or caregiver's involvement in the education, and that's something that parents become passionate about as they spend the year learning about their children and being involved as partners in their child's education. In Lane County, I can speak for the children that and families that are served there, that people are enthusiastic learners. The children are enthusiastic learners, as are the parents. And we're proud of a program that truly the people who participate in the program, the parents, are just excited about the program as the kids. And, you know, that's not always the case in education. That's not always the case in social services. So the people that are receiving services are participating in designing and evaluating the services. In Oregon, we have a program that's a national model. We leverage federal dollars as well as utilizing state dollars to ensure that every county in the state has quality early childhood programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Soto.
You're still going. Go ahead.
Yeah, wait. Okay, thank you.
Chairman Walker, members of the committee, my name is Donna Schnitger, and I'm the director of Head Start of Harney County in Burns, Oregon. And I want to give a little bit of background on Head Start this morning. Head Start's been in existence for 40 years and started many years ago to serve families who were living in poverty and could not afford to access preschool services. Understanding that when children don't get the preschool services that they need, they may not be successful in the future. In 1987, the Oregon legislature put into statute that they would also fund a like program, just like the federal Head Start, and formulated a look-alike program called Oregon Pre-Kindergarten Program. With the mandate and charge that by 2004, Head Start would be fully funded. We have come and gone from 2004, and we are still not fully funded, understanding that budget restraints have made that not possible. There are many research organizations out there that have done a variety of research projects on Head Start, and all of them have come to say that Head Start works. As Superintendent Castillo said, it saves $7 later on. Translating our $14 million cut into that $7 saving, the $14 million cut will cost Oregon $100 million in the future when the children who will be cut will be 27 years old. We serve the lowest income, highest need families. We also are mandated to serve 10% of children with disabilities. Now, this is a savings to early intervention, or actually early childhood special education, because they don't have to form specialized preschools to serve the children. They're integrated into our population, mainstreamed. So they learn faster because they're with typically developing peers. Without Head Start, those low-income families that are cut will never access preschool. When families are worried about food, shelter, and clothing, and getting to work, preschool is the last thing that they can afford on their list. So without Head Start, children could be left behind. We also employ 2,500 staff throughout the state. Many of them are former parents, because part of the things that we do is work with parents to get them the education that they need to be successful in life. We are also monitored every 3 years by a team of people who come into each program to look at the quality of services that we're delivering, and we are matched. Our services are matched against 1,797 performance standards. So we have a lot of things that we are held accountable for and monitored against to ensure that we're delivering the services that we need to our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Superintendent Castillo, do you have 1,797 performance standards that you have to review our schools by? That's a huge number.
That is a huge number. I don't know what the exact count would be, but we do have a lot of performance standards for our schools. I'm just thinking about all the different data points required under No Child Left Behind, and there are a whole lot under just that mandate alone, let alone what our state requirements are for our schools. So Yes, there are a lot of standards by which we are holding our schools accountable today in the state of Oregon and across this country. And I think the Head Start program, as we just heard, has been really trying to deliver more on the calls for more accountability for the Head Start program and the quality of their program and monitoring results of their programs, and have been open to that kind of scrutiny and really taking a hard look at the quality of their programs and trying to deliver the results that we all want for the investments that we're making in the program.
Thank you. I have just a couple questions, and then I know Senator Morissette had a question. Can one of you, and perhaps you, Ms. Soto, could you explain how the federal dollars are leveraged and what the contribution is required of the state?
Madam Chair, there is no formal contribution level. Before we had the Oregon pre-kindergarten program, there were about 22 counties that had Head Start, federal Head Start programs. The state dollars, when they're combined with federal dollars, the cost of administration and service delivery is greatly reduced. I would also say for the federal dollars, a full 20% of our federal grant must be in-kind or matching services. So it has to do with volunteer contributions as well as sometimes reduced rents if a church is providing a rent, or some of the other things that we use, dentist services, etc. Because we are a comprehensive program, there's medical, dental, food services, etc. So there's a lot of room for the entire community to participate in making sure we're successful.
Thank you. And then the other thing that you mentioned was the governor's current budget is an 18% cut. Can you tell me, and maybe I overlooked it in your testimony, what percentage of the children are being served now under the current budget, and what an 18% cut means for how many fewer students will we be serving?
It's about 950 less students statewide. Currently, we're serving just under 60%. And so the 18% cut would put us at about 54, just under 54% of eligible families. And the families we serve are typically poverty level or below, so they're the poorest of the poor families.
Thank you. Senator Morissette, you had a question?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. My question was basically how many kids were going to be cut, and you answered that. My other question is, can you make a case for not making cuts this biennium? Now let me finish why I'm asking this. Because the co-chairs are looking for, basically, and I read this in the paper the other day, immediate return. Put the money where it does the most good right away. Can you make a case for not making those cuts in this biennium? I know you can, but go ahead and tell me.
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, I believe that when you make the immediate return is you have children who are not ready to go to kindergarten, which puts them behind, which costs a lot of money in getting them up to speed with special ed services. So that's the immediate cost. And the immediate return is having them ready to go to school.
Okay, thank you. Just to follow up, I understand that, and I agree totally with you, but you understand the budget crunch that we're in, and you understand the philosophy of immediate return. And if you make the case that when they're 27 years old, they would have cost the state X number of millions, I understand that too. But concentrate on the immediate concern, and then concentrate your full court press on members of the education subcommittee, because they're the ones who will make this decision.
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, I would say part of what we do is effectively prevent crises, crises within families. So some of the immediate costs have to do with preventing child abuse and having people end up in prison, being part of the court system. It has to do, Head Start has child care services. It has to do with many, many families not losing their child care. I'm not much of a sports person, so when you say a full court press, but this is what I think. And that's that I know many families that would lose their jobs if they did not have Head Start services and the social service support to help them have childcare, many low-paying jobs. If you miss a few days because you have a sick child, you lose your job. The Head Start social service staff help parents prevent illness, help them know when it's appropriate to take them to the doctor so they don't lose those, you know, so children are not as ill, and they help them find backup childcare and create support networks within the community to help them address those issues. That is some of the more immediate benefits of Head Start.
Thank you very much.
And if I could just chime in, Madam Chair and members, Senator Morissette, guess what? Another way of looking at it, too, is that these children only have this time right now that they're preschool age.
Okay.
And so we affect them right now in their lives, and we can set them on a course for success or not. And that's the policy decision that we're faced with in this legislative session. Are we going to affect positively the life of these children in their preschool years and set them up for success? And that's the policy decision that's before you, all of you.
Thank you.
And if I might ask, too, when my father was married to someone other than my mother, my stepmother, that would be, she had a child who had been in Head Start when she was a single parent, and he was a very slow reader, and Head Start was just a tremendous asset to getting this young boy ready for school. And isn't that true? Aren't those some of the services that you provide in getting these kids ready to read?
Mm-hmm. Senator Walker, Madam Chair, that is one of the basic things we do with children is working with the kindergarten teachers to make sure that we are teaching the kids the things that they need to be ready for kindergarten. And one of the things that I know from my own personal experience is children in kindergarten are learning now what they used to learn in the first grade about 5 years ago. So if they don't have preschool, they're already at a loss because they need to know, identify at least 10 numbers. They got to identify the letters of the alphabet. They have to know their name. They need to know a lot of social skills like taking turns. And without having preschool to teach them, because like I said before, when they're at home, their families are worried about making money, surviving, and taking time to teach the children, that just does not exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great, thank you. Does anyone else have any questions? Great, thank you, ladies. I really appreciate your time and coming in front of the committee. Okay, I'd like to call up next Gary Withers and Swati. Uh-oh, I'm going to do bad. Adarika? Over there would be fine. If you can state your name and your affiliation, that would be great.
Good afternoon. I'm Gary Withers. I'm the president of the Children's Institute, and the Children's Institute is a independent, nonpartisan, research-driven action tank. We like to think that we marshal resources and smart thinking to ignite action for Oregon's vulnerable children. My colleague with me today is Swati Adarkar. She is our vice president for communications and research. The research is clear that there's an incredible link between poverty and whether or not a child's going to be ready for school. Indeed, those children who try to enter school from poverty are frequently not prepared. They start behind and they stay behind. So how many children do we have in poverty in the state of Oregon? We have about 148,000 children in poverty, 0 to 18, and that's at the basic federal poverty level. That's more than all the population of the city of Eugene. You're familiar with the old adage, I'm sure, that until the third grade, a child is learning how to read. After the third grade, a child is reading to learn. The third grade is a huge benchmark, and the key is to try to ensure that as many children as possible are reading at grade level by the time that they reach the end of third grade. Today, we have almost 25% of all Oregon kindergartners entering first grade not ready to learn. And if they start behind, they're going to stay behind. And if they're not ready to learn, I'm sorry, if they are not reading at third grade level by the time that they're moving on to fourth grade, the odds are that they may not graduate from high school. We've seen a lot of focus on the development of the brain in the last couple of decades. And I think the best way to think about this development of the brain is to maybe think of a little analogy. I don't know about the rest of you, but I like to garden once in a while, but I'm always late. And this spring, I was really late. I got up to my blueberries, and I thought, boy, it's awfully late in the spring to be putting fertilizer on them, but I put a little fertilizer on the blueberries. And I'll be darned. This summer, we had the biggest crop. We had the sweetest, plumpest berries because I had found this little sliver of window of opportunity to put that fertilizer on. Well, think of what we do for pre-kindergarten kids as that little window, that little sliver of opportunity. That period, only 5 years, really only 2 years for 3- and 4-year-olds, in lives that will stretch 75, 80, 85 years. This is a key, key point in time. Child's brain is developed almost 90% by the end of their 5th year. We have a lot of providers in our community who have come down here seeking funds for late-stage interventions because they are dealing with the consequences of our lack of planning, our lack of focus on the early stages. In fact, we have met with several of those providers, and several of the residential providers have told us that if you were to put significantly more funds into the pre-K arena, we'd see significant decline in the needs for residential services. We'd see far fewer children, far fewer adolescents out of control, far more children who are ready to learn and are successful in their learning. Over the years, there's been a lot of stress on safety, particularly in child care. And while that is important, that's only half a loaf. The rest of the loaf is on the quality, and particularly the quality of early childhood education. We've had the opportunity, the luxury, if you will, to sit down and to go through national research, analysis of analysis, and so on, and met with experts across the state and some across the nation. We're affiliated with the RAND Corporation's Promising Practices Institute. We've met with their researchers. And we know that there are components. There are components in pre-K programs that are absolutely essential, and if you stay focused on those quality components, such as the quality of your teachers, the education of your teachers, your class size, the involvement of parents, that you end up with some of the best results. Now, in 1988, the state started with 5% of our children involved in pre-kindergarten. It has gotten to 60%, as we've heard today. With these cuts, it'll go below 54%. That is heading in the wrong direction. And even more importantly, if you look at what Oregon is doing compared with some states you might not normally think of, such as Illinois, such as Oklahoma, and New Jersey, we're falling way behind. New Jersey's putting $380 million into early childhood. If you look at just four-year-olds involved in pre-kindergarten, all four-year-olds, whether they come from an impoverished background or not, New Jersey has 63% of their four-year-olds involved in pre-kindergarten. We have 41%. They have 50% more of their young children involved in pre-kindergarten. The research has been cited, and I just want to make a couple more mentions of the research. There's a Nobel Prize winning economist, James Heckman. He's sort of the leader in looking at human capital and return on human capital. He has concluded, along with others, that if you really want to make an investment that makes a difference, an investment on the front end that makes a difference, both in the interim term as well as the long term, investing in early childhood is what really makes that difference. And there's been a study that was cited earlier, and that is the Perry Preschool Study. This is a study that comes out of Ypsilanti, Michigan, and it's truly the gold standard. It is a 40-year study. Prescription drugs don't have 40-year studies. And it's a 40-year study. They have followed these kids. There's a gentleman who tracks each one of them down, some from the control group, some from those who, well, all of those in the control group and all of those who participated in the preschool. And the results are staggering. As you've heard, if you did not go to the preschool at Perry Preschool, if you were in the control group, you're 5 times more likely to be involved in serious crime. And the results go on from there. Two economists out of Minneapolis, Art Rolnick and Rob Grunewald, two hard-nosed economists, took a look at the results from the Perry Preschool, and they tried to determine what the returns really were, and they want to weigh what those returns were compared to economic development returns for any other project. In fact, they actually focused on a stadium. They determined that there was a 12% internalized rate of return by investing in early childhood. They also determined that there was no other public investment that got that level of return, and that 80% of the benefit was a benefit for the public. The Perry Preschool itself now, after their 40-year study, has demonstrated for every dollar invested, $12.90 has been returned to the public. So what will the consequences be if we don't invest? If 950 or nearly 1,000 children are cut out of Oregon Head Start? Well, there's another economist, and his name is Steve Barnett, and he comes out of Rutgers University. He is the director of the Head Start, he is the director of the National Institute for Early Education Research. He has calculated that when you fail to invest in 3- and 4-year-olds with quality pre-kindergarten programs, the cost is $100,000 per child. So, for 1,000 children left out, we're talking about a cost of $100 million. And yes, that's $100 million over time, but that's $100 million over a period of time when the economy of Oregon will not have the benefit of having those additional trained and skilled workers participating in the workforce.
Thank you. Would you like to make some comments?
I'll just be here for questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do we have some questions here on the committee? I am always impressed by these studies, Mr. Withers, because they tell it like it is. And I was not familiar with this 40-year study. This is impressive. Can we find that on the web somewhere?
Yes.
Sure.
It's we've given you a...
You'll have to state your name, please.
I'm Swatia Darkar with the Children's Institute, and before you is a pre-publication version of an issue brief on early childhood development. Much of the research that Gary cited is in this publication, and the websites for the Perry study and so forth are also included in the endnotes.
The chair of the board, actually, of the High Scope Educational Research Foundation is Matt Hennessy, and he's the CEO of QuickTracks, an inventory auditing firm in Portland. And he is actually a member of a group called Ready for School. It's a group of business leaders and civic leaders and philanthropic leaders, including former Governor Attia and others, who have come together to really help us make the case that this is an incredible investment. At the national level, there's the Committee for Economic Development, a group of national leaders doing the same thing. This group of primarily business people see this as, frankly, one of the best investments that can possibly be made, interim term, long term.
I just wanted to add one comment. One of the issues before you that I know you're struggling with, as well as the rest of the public in Oregon, is how to adequately fund our schools, kindergarten through high school. And, you know, if you look at the research, when you start in kindergarten, you're starting too late. If we want to use our K through 12 education dollars wisely, it would be best put before children come, and we'll have our dollars will be stretched much further. That's the research, what the research has shown us.
Well, and I would like to comment on that because I read a research study where childhood obesity doesn't start in elementary school. It starts in pre-K. It starts when the parents give them juice and they instead of water, and we have all of these things. But truly, obesity, they've traced that back to about the preschool age, and I think you would agree with that.
It's tough because many of these prevention programs, as were mentioned earlier, that we often don't get to see the benefit till, you know, many years hence. But if you look at what portion of our budget is growing, we know corrections is growing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are folks who've been involved with the Invest in Crime. It was their study was cited earlier, and one of their leaders talks about, you know, why should we be assuring a jail cell for children and not be working on the front end and offering the supports needed to make sure they don't get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what this research is all about.
Thank you. Senator Morrison?
Yes, thank you. There can't be two Dr. Perrys. We had one visit us.
It is a different.
Oh, it is a different.
It is. One is the Perry Preschool, and one is Bruce Perry, who has done the research around what happens to the brain when there's abuse and maltreatment.
Okay. And follow up, please?
Yes.
We heard the Dr. Perry that does the study of the brain and the neglect and the maltreatment. That's the other Dr. Perry, right?
Absolutely. Okay. This school is called the Perry Preschool.
Okay.
But the researchers who
I
did...
I was out of the room when you...
No problem. It is confusing, though, because...
Okay. Let me just say, if you don't mind, Madam Chair, just for a moment. The research that Dr. Perry presents is the effect on the brain of simple neglect of a child that's
sure.
almost irreversible. And
sure.
so if the child goes up to 4 and 5 years old, then you may... never change that, and it does cause, you know, various problems, including developmental disabilities and also some mental illnesses. That's irreversible if you neglect at an early age. So they dovetail.
You're absolutely right. We rarely, in the area of social science and social programs, have this kind of solid research to back investments in this area. This is very unusual. And now it's just, you know, there's nobody out there disagreeing
yeah.
with this information.
Thank you.
And could you comment, I don't know if you've done any research on this, how other states are funding their pre-K programs?
There are a variety of strategies. You're probably familiar with an initiative that was done in California called First Five. Rob Reiner, a well-known actor, spearheaded that effort. There's a variety of different things, whether it's an initiative, legislative action in certain states. In New Jersey, it was actually a court case based on school equity financing. In Florida, they passed an initiative. What you see is that there are different strategies to get there, but many states are quite aggressively augmenting their funds in early education, not moving in the direction that we're proposing with the cuts.
We are actually moving forward and trying to develop some creative revenue strategies, and in the next handful of months we intend to invite a couple of the leading economists from across the nation who have given a lot of thought to this issue to see what sort of strategies we might be able to develop.
I think we need all the help we can get, Mr. Withers. Senator Decker has a question.
I don't have a question, but I do just a comment, and you indicated, Mr. Withers, just thinking about, when I think about Head Start, and obviously no one is going to, I think the research and the data now is just unequivocally clear in terms of the benefits to society, and you just have to scan the globe to see what other countries are doing in terms of early childhood. The thought that occurs to me is that if you look at our fiscal structure and you look at the federal government and you think, how is Head Start going to fare and compete? We're all well aware of the federal budget deficit and
sure.
foreign policy engagements and the desire to really clamp back on domestic spending. So that's going to impact Head Start. When we look at our budget here in Oregon, we're increasingly becoming reliant, although that will end really soon, on the federal government. It's the area of our state budget that's grown the fastest, and Senator Starr and I have been in many briefings on this in the last few weeks. And it's mainly health care transfer dollars, but the federal government is very aggressive and very assertive in bringing that. And so we have this two-year issue, whether it's Head Start or higher education or K-12, but I really look at what in the out years, the 07, 09, 09, 11, And this isn't good news, is if you think it's bad now,
right.
when we start really looking into the out years, as we know what the federal government has to do, they're going to really clamp down on those federal health care transfers, Medicaid. I would think get out of the general fund or get as much out of the state general fund as you possibly can for Head Start. And as you gather those economists in the coming weeks, I would really... ask them and whoever expertise you bring in, ask them to think about how do we not attach ourselves to the state general fund, because the competitiveness of those dollars is just going to become so, so difficult, or help us think about what other options we have with the general fund.
Minnesota's pursuing an endowment idea, and we think that may be worth taking a look at as well. But they're in the early stages of it, and there, as you can imagine, there are some pluses and there are some minuses associated with it, too. So the biggest minus being you have to raise the private dollars to build the endowment to start with. So.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, Madam Chair, we try to think creatively with whether it's cultural trust or other ways
mm-hmm.
of arts groups not wanting to be a part of the state general fund, thought of other ways to get out, and Head Start is a good candidate because everyone, it's hard to find folks who don't agree with mm-hmm. the mission.
Mm-hmm. I think the worst news will be in a decade or so when somebody comes and lays out some projections and demonstrates what the true economic impact has been, including general fund revenues, as a result of failing to invest. Because I think those models are not that far away. Mm-hmm. It's not a positive spiral. So.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate you coming. Next, we have Nancy Lantini from the Department of Education.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nancy Lantini, the Assistant Superintendent for the Office of Student Learning and Partnerships. The Early Childhood Unit is in that office. Actually, I think everything you heard were things that I might tell you, and you don't need to hear them again. So I'm here to answer any questions you might have. The only thing that I possibly didn't hear strongly enough is how are our children doing as far as outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
When we get our students that come into the preschool programs, obviously their developmental skills are much lower than their more advantaged peer group. They're not as able to do some of the activities that other children could do. So what the goal of the preschool program is to at least get them to comparable to their more advantaged peer group. And the best way to find out whether or not we're doing that is to ask kindergarten teachers. So for the last two sessions, we've had conducted a kindergarten survey. And in November, a teacher is asked to take one of their half-day classes and list those students down and look at six elements that are known to be the important elements for getting ready for school. And the teachers rate these students on this rating scale. We get about a 60% return rate, which is really high for teachers to return this information to us. And the results from the survey show that our kids are doing quite well. We've noticed that in the last two sessions, this 2004 report you will be getting during the session, we're just at the point of analyzing the data right now. But looking at the last two surveys, our students are doing quite well. We're seeing a gap in closing in the areas of usage of language, in physical well-being, and in motor development. Those are three strong areas that we're seeing that the kids are getting closer to the age peer group of the statewide kids with or without preschool programs. The other thing that we're embarking on that you'll be interested in is we're also taking a look at new ways to demonstrate student growth right within the program. The Early Childhood Unit, including the OPK program, has embarked on a database for our students similar to the student ID numbers that we have for school-age programs. So we'll have a way of identifying the growth of these students as they get to third grade and take benchmark tests, or as they get on in school, we'll be able to follow how are they doing in school over the time that at least they're in an Oregon school. In addition to that, we're setting some foundations or content standards for preschool that are aligned to our kindergarten grade 1 and 2 and 3 content standards, and so that our teachers that are working with preschool students will be able to do observational assessments. This won't be paper pencil, but there'll be observational assessments on how well the children are doing, again, in elements that are important for getting ready for school. And that assessment also is actually being piloted right now in several of our preschool programs to make sure that it is something that is going to get us the information that we need. So in the future, we'll have some other data for you to show how well they're doing internally as well as with information that kindergarten teachers tell us.
Thank you, Ms. Martini. Do you have any questions from the committee? When is your report coming out that you're doing?
Actually, they're meeting, the staff is meeting this week, and we have a writer. I'm asking them to give it to us in about 2 weeks, so we should be able to have it in 3 weeks for you.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Okay, well, we're going to still be here, so I look forward to getting that report.
I'm glad to share that with you.
Thank you very much. Okay, I think that was all we had signed up. That was all we had. Those were all the folks we had signed up for the Head Start presentation. And so I think the next thing we'll do is open a public hearing on Senate Bill 414. And I want to thank everyone that came today for the Head Start presentation. And I'll get the sign-up sheet. Representative Hass, do you want to come forward? We've sent for Senator Ringo. He should be here momentarily, but we'll ask you to get started. Okay, tell us about Senate Bill 414.
Thank you, Chair. Mark Hass, State Representative from House District 27. And what I thought I would do today is we have a field of experts, if you will, on the issue of kindergarten and its benefits. They are far more expert in this field than I am. I am having handed out to you some highlights of some research that will sound very similar to what you've just been exposed to with Head Start. The research that I've highlighted here is done within the last 2 years, comparing half-day kindergarten versus full-day, and the findings add to a much larger body of research that showed the benefits are really irrefutable in terms of what a full day of kindergarten does for a child's academic success. The most critical one, I think, is kids who go through a full-day kindergarten learn to read sooner. And you heard in the testimony about Head Start about how important it is to be a proficient reader by third grade. And the kids who struggle to read after third grade are much more likely to drop out. And when kids drop out of school, they are very expensive, because we see them in the welfare system and the correction system, and those kids, those people are doomed to a lifetime of difficulty. So the research is irrefutable, and I think it would be wise for us from a financial perspective to put the funding from 2.5 hours, which we do now, up to 4 or 5 hours. And one very compelling point of this argument from an economic side is the relative cost of what that would be. It would not be twice as much. Please remember, we're already spending more than $200 million on a half day of kindergarten. But because the overhead is already there, the lights, the administration, the janitor, to go an extra 2.5 hours only increases the cost about 21%. To me, that feels like a bargain, especially in this time of tight budgets. So take a hard look at that, if you will, and you say, okay, Mark, even if that's a good deal, still, Oregon is in a tight budget situation, and you're asking to do more here, not bringing anything to the other side of the equation. And I think you're right if that's all we did. But I do want to mention, in terms of context of this bill, how the ESD reform bill figures into this. And that's what we've been working on the last year or so, was to say, yes, we can do kindergarten full day, and we'll pay for it through administrative savings and ESD. And it's a 1-2 punch. I do think it would be irresponsible for a legislator to bring in proposals and then saying it's up to you to figure out how to pay for it. And that's why we brought in those two bills. And frankly, I think it would be irresponsible just to do one bill or the other and not both. And I think it would be probably even more irresponsible to do neither. We all know the saying that it's easy to marshal an army to preserve the status quo. So I urge your favorable consideration on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Ringo has joined us.
Thank you. I'm for the record, Senator Charlie Ringo, I agree with everything he said. No, just to add a couple things, you know. We both have kindergartners. I think by the time this bill would take effect, they'll be moving on up, so it wouldn't impact us personally. The data supporting the tremendous difference that all-day kindergarten makes, especially for middle to lower socioeconomic level, is absolutely convincing. It's absolutely convincing. I've had discussions with people where I said, well, what's more important, all-day kindergarten, all day third grade, all day fifth grade, all day 12th grade? I've had educators say, you know, it's probably you can make the case that all day kindergarten is more important than all day 12th grade. By that time, those kids are, a lot of them are already checked out and moving on. They're spending half their time in jobs somewhere anyway. And the way I look at the, when we started looking at this issue of all the kindergarten, it's like, okay, the first option, plan A, was we're just going to mandate it. It's so important, we're going to mandate it, and the districts are going to have to find a way to come up with the money. Well, we understand the political problems with that. So that's where plan B is. We're just going to change the funding formula. And we're not going to operate under the current assumption that kindergarten is only worth half the money. If we do accept the proposition that full-day kindergarten is as important as the rest of the grades, well, then let's recognize that in the funding formula. Let's just recognize that in the funding formula. Is this without problems? No, because frankly there would be a period of adaptation. Districts would be given a financial incentive to offer full-day kindergarten, so they would gradually move there. For some areas that might be harder than others. For example, Beaverton, where schools are so crowded, they might have difficulty finding facilities for all-day kindergarten, and it would be a little bit more of a hurdle for them than, say, an area with declining students, and they can easily find an extra classroom somewhere. So it certainly isn't a perfect solution, but this is something, it's my understanding, 30 states have full-day kindergarten, and it's because there's a reason for that. And experts will come up and tell you those reasons more than I, but to me this is simply saying full-day kindergarten is just as important as every other grade. Let's recognize that in the funding formula. So thanks very much.
Thank you. Gentlemen, tell me, if we don't get the $40 million savings from ESD consolidation, where's the money coming from?
Well,
what's going to go to the back of the line?
If you change the funding formula, let's look at that plan. We're changing the funding formula. Essentially, you're going to slightly thin the soup for all the rest of the grades. And in my discussions with the folks in the education community, they're resistant to that idea that, oh, no, you can't be taking money from anywhere else. On the one hand, I understand that, but on the other hand, we can't be stuck in a status quo if it doesn't make sense. And if the status quo is that full-day kindergarten is just as important as the rest of the grades, then let's do that. Let's just do that. But when you, Senator Walker, when you said where's the money going to come from, it is going to thin the soup slightly from the rest of the grades.
Assuming that there aren't savings generated.
That's right.
ESDs. I think
that's
in part because of the work that Senator Ringo has done on ESDs over the last year has forced the ESD Association itself to fold its cards and come in with its own consolidation plan. So there will be savings there, whether it's $3 million or $83 million, no one knows yet. But there will be savings there. And by the way, you know this bill is optional for school districts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The state of Arizona just passed full-day kindergarten this year, and it was interesting reading the news stories about that and facing some of the very same questions about, well, you know, how are we going to do this? How are we going to pay for this? Kids aren't ready for a full day, and some of those same arguments that have been discounted by the research. And I was thinking, you know, 60 or 70 years ago, Oregon had an 8th-grade system, and at some point they went to 12 grades. And I can imagine some of the very same questions. Well, maybe kids don't need all that education. And where are we going to get the money? Now is not the time. It's a new mandate and all this. But I'm certainly glad they moved on to that, along with other changes that we continually have to make in our education system. So thank you again for hearing this. And we've got a long list of experts here.
Any questions, Senator Cruz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of concerns. Number one, let's not assume that Senate Bill 415 stays in its current form.
I wouldn't do that, Senator.
You know, so the amount of savings there is speculative at this point. Best. Another concern is there are some schools, maybe not the majority, but some, who have 2 half-day kindergarten classes and they don't have space to go to full K, and so this would penalize them in the formula, which is another concern. But, you know, I guess I would really be interested on the front end, and you say this is tied to ESD, it may have to be tied to other things, is I'd like a price tag on this.
Chair Walker, Senator Cruz, the price tag is about $40 million if all school districts signed up for it. And, of course, there's no way to tell how many would. And I think you'll hear from Sue Robertson or some of the other people here about the dilemma of that afternoon morning issue, because we do have that in Beaverton. But so I think she'll have an interesting perspective on that for you.
Thank you.
Yes, Senator Morsett, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you. I had a bill that would have done that differently by requiring that the mandatory age of attendance be 5 instead of 7, and that didn't fly. Part of the problem that schools who do have kindergarten currently the half day is that people don't attend. The people that should attend don't attend, so that's a problem. I don't know how many you would project to attend an optional full day kindergarten. Have you thought of that in terms of the?
Well, I do know that my daughter, Senator Marcette, is in a kindergarten class right now. It's 2.5 hours, and they just added a special reading program that's an extra hour.
Yeah.
95% of those parents and those kids signed up for that, which tells me that there is a lot of people, a lot of parents, a lot of middle-class parents, frankly, hoping for a full-day kindergarten. The thing about kindergarten is private schools have all-day kindergarten, and the schools that receive federal money for low-income populations have all-day kindergarten. And there's a reason for that. And it frustrates me that the middle-class families in that equation who are not wealthy enough to go to private school and don't qualify for the low-income benefits are the ones who seem to be left out in this. And those are all of our constituents, and it is frustrating. And I bring, I think, some of those frustrations through in this legislation.
All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank
I think I'll
much.
Bring the experts up now, as you so poignantly pointed out. okay, so next we have Sue Robertson, and I believe, Sue, you were bringing someone with you, or is it all you?
Just maybe right now. I think there's more people.
Okay, we do have some other folks testifying later, but why don't you state your name and who you're with?
Madam Chair, I'm Sue Robertson. I'm an executive administrator with the Beaverton School District. Part of my responsibility is to oversee kindergarten programming, so that's one of my areas. I'd like to speak with you today on behalf of this bill and give you a few reasons why Beaverton favors this bill. First of all, Beaverton believes the research supports this bill. Reading ability predicts K-16 success. We see studies over and over again that indicate that students who learn to read early are at much less risk of dropping out. They are they have a greater ability to succeed through college. And the early years are the critical years as far as reading ability. Proficiency is directly related to the quality and quantity of instruction. The research supports this, that proficient readers have excellent instruction and they also have lots of instruction. I think we've all heard of the book, All I Really Need to Know, I Learned in Kindergarten. I think if this author were writing the same book today, he'd say, half of what I really need to know, I learned in kindergarten, because the standards and the expectations today are much higher than they were years ago. Under NCLB, students are expected to make progress. They are expected to learn to read, and they are expected, if they are to be successful, K-16, to be fluent readers by the third grade. It's critical that they come in kindergarten and learn the beginnings of these skills. Vocabulary size in kindergarten predicts reading comprehension in later elementary years. Kindergarten is the key, that is the area where the level where they learn the most vocabulary in the least amount of time. That's not to say they don't need a full day. They do need a full day to do that. We just listened to Ed Kamenui today in an all-administrators meeting, and he was citing some of that research. It was fascinating to hear what kindergarten predicts as far as its success, and the vocabulary is critical to reading proficiency. Students who enter school already behind fall further and further behind. I'll speak in a minute about the achievement gap. The achievement gap does not begin the moment students enter school. I want you to envision students as coming to school with ladders. There's a wall up here. They all need to get over that wall. But they're coming with different lengths of ladders. Some have ladders that reach all the way to the top, and they can go up and over one rung at a time. Other students have shorter ladders. what are they going to do? They're going to go up and up and up the rungs, but they're going to fall far short of what they need when they reach that 12th rung, if they reach that rung. It's important that we give them a foundation, a boost below, so that last rung gets them up and over that wall. Students in full-day programs outperform those in half-day programs in first grade. It is clear from the studies that students that attend, the more time they have in kindergarten, the better they perform in first grade. Half-day actually may be less developmentally appropriate than full day. I know there are some that have questioned whether or not students can succeed in full day programs. Is that too long for 5-year-olds? Some just turning 5. But we've found that students that are prepared well when the academic instruction is appropriate, when it is developmentally appropriate, then teachers are less rushed. They are not feeling like they have to go through so much and so short of a time. I want you to remember, it's not like going from any other grade to another grade. In first grade, those children have had experience in kindergarten. In second grade, they've had experience in first grade. They know the school routines. They get a lot of that down. Kindergarten, for many of those children, that is their first experience in school. And that there's a lot for a teacher to do in only 2.5 hours. Another reason Beaverton supports this is that through our Title I schools. Our Title I schools actually confirm the research. We currently have 11 Title schools. 4 of those schools use their Title funding to offer full-day programs. We have several others of those schools who use their Title funding to offer 4-hour programs. Some have extended kindergarten for English language learners. It has been, what we have seen over time is that students do make gains when they have the extended time. In particular, we have a kindergarten intensive program where students get some intense interventions with extended time. They actually attend 2 sessions because we don't have the full day options in all schools. And their gains have been quite impressive the last several years. Data indicates that they are at grade level by first grade. They come in behind, they are at risk, they make incredible gains during that amount of time. We unfortunately only have 11 Title schools out of our 31 schools, and so that funding is not available in the other elementary schools. We believe that spending the resources now will save us later. I know others have spoken to this. I heard a little bit about the Head Start testimony as well. It does make sense, especially during poor economic times when you have limited funds, to put them at the front end rather than the back end. That's just common sense. It's fiscally responsible. Beaverton believes so strongly in this that we actually have implemented a very aggressive K-2 initiative. You may have heard our superintendent speak to our one district goal, and that is each and every student will increase academic achievement over the next 5 years, each and every student without exception. That's a very aggressive goal. To that end, we have this K-2 initiative right now in the areas of literacy and math. We have literacy coaches in every elementary school, and we are putting our resources at the K-2 level quite aggressively at this time. And I spoke a moment ago about the achievement gap. We believe that kindergarten full-day programs, putting the resources at the front end, is critical to closing that achievement gap. That gap, we hear more about it at the high school level, the secondary level, middle school. That gap is the moment they enter our doors. Those children come from all backgrounds. They come from disadvantaged homes, poverty. We have English language learners. We have minority populations, and we are not serving them. And the first data that we collect, we look at third grade, and students, those populations are already behind. By 8th grade, you see an even greater gap. And then by 10th grade, it's greater yet. We've got to do something at the front end that changes that. I believe Representative Haas mentioned working parents a moment ago. It's been our experience in Beaverton that many of our working parents would prefer full-day programs. They opt for private programs because they are full-day. Their working schedules require that they have full-day care, and they're not willing to fragment their children's day by breaking it up between kindergarten and then a daycare program or some other form of care. They would prefer to have them in our programs, and they believe that public school programs are actually better for their children, but this is not an option. Sometimes when they begin in a private school program, they may continue in that program. We want to provide for all of our families, not just a select few, and kindergarten is a critical area for that. And we also appreciate in Beaverton the flexibility of this bill. It was spoken to just a few moments ago as well. In a district like Beaverton, where capacity is a major issue, it is, we are struggling to find space, mostly at the secondary level, but even at the elementary level, it is a critical concern. But the flexibility in this bill allows us to provide programs in schools where we do have space and then to plan for the future. And look to those times when we can have full-day programs. It's something to the effect of you build it, they will come. If this were an option in Beaverton, I guarantee we would be looking for the space, and we would not leave any rock unturned in order to find it, to be able to provide this for our children, because we truly believe this is what's best for children. And we believe this is cost-effective. It's not a double cost per pupil. As it was stated a few moments ago, we do have, the lights are still on, the energy is still being used. It makes sense. If it's I don't know the numbers, but I heard 21% a moment ago increase, that's fiscally responsible. It makes sense for our children and for our very youngest children to be able to give them that step up that they so desperately need. We know you have difficult decisions to make, and we trust you as our lawmakers to be determining the choices for our future. And we know that you believe in public education, and we know you are not willing to sacrifice the education of our future citizens. We know the decisions are difficult. But when you are making your decisions about what to fund and not fund, we would ask in Beaverton that you not think of kindergarten as a luxury. It is no longer a luxury. It is a critical need. It is much of a need as secondary school, as 9 through 12. We don't have a K-8 system like that anymore, as Representative Haas mentioned. It is a critical need. It is not a luxury. And we urge you to pass this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Robertson. Any questions? Senator Decker.
Well, I just have to say, Ms. Robertson's husband is Reed Robertson, who was an eighth grade teacher of mine, science, yeah. And I was one of those low ladder students.
That's not what he says.
But he was one of those incredibly special teachers that we hear about that was like so beloved by all the students, and so tell Reed hello, and it's good to see you.
I will do that, and he is so very proud of you.
Thanks.
That's sweet.
See, he was one of those kindergartners that came in.
Senator Starr, you have a question?
Yes, I do. You mentioned that you now have literacy coaches in each of your schools.
Correct.
Have you begun teaching phonemic awareness and phonics explicitly?
We teach
by direct instruction.
Senator Starr, we teach the big five: phonemic awareness, fluency, comprehension, vocabulary, and phonics.
Those under five. The whole language approach, or are you in fact teaching phonemic awareness and phonics correctly by direct instruction?
It's direct instruction, and there is still whole language instruction too. There's not one method that is used solely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Ms. Robertson, I appreciate you coming to the committee. We all do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, next I'd like to call up Arlene Roblin and Would your husband like to join you, Representative Roblin? Well, you know, we'd like to have you come join us.
Do you want to take a vote on that, or?
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi, you want to state your name and who you're with besides the man next to you?
Yes. I'm Arlene Roblin. I'm a principal at Madison Elementary School in Coos Bay, Oregon.
Great.
And a former kindergarten teacher.
All right.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the Senate Education Committee, it has been my pleasure to work as an administrator in high poverty schools for the past 6 years of my career. I've met many extraordinary people battling circumstances we might have difficulty imagining. 80% of the families in my school are at the poverty level. The reasons for their poverty include unemployment, illness, divorce, limited job skills, addiction recovery issues, and marginal social skills. We have 60 homeless families in my school. Poverty brings with it incredible stress on families and a survival mentality rather than the mentality of possibility. The only hope for the children of poverty is education, a proper education. For many children in poverty, accessing a proper education in a timely manner is somewhat challenging. Many of our five-year-olds come to us with very low vocabulary, poor concepts and directionality, such as up, down, beside, in front of, under, over, which are essential for reading. They have poor grooming habits, poor health habits, inability to listen, and great difficulty getting along with peers. Additionally, many are in poor health due to a lack of medical care. Nearly all have very limited exposure to music, art, games, books, or rhymes. Those who teach kindergarten are amazing individuals. Those who teach kindergarten do so because of a calling. Currently, our kindergarten teachers attempt to do the impossible. They sing, dance, mold, model, invent ways to reach these 5 and 6 year old minds so that they might understand how the world works. They build the foundation for children's education, instilling skills and values about learning and about possibilities. And they do so in 2.5 hours a day. Children of poverty are among our most fragile citizens. I encourage you to consider the difference we could make in these young lives by offering a full day of stimulating learning, stable relationships, and engaging intellectual challenges. Children of poverty would particularly benefit from a full day kindergarten program. For many of our students, school is an oasis. Building the capacity for learning at the ground level rather than remediation seems like a sound, smart practice. Thank you.
Thank you. Committee, do you have some questions for Ms. Roblin? I'm impressed that the two of you are both principals. Were you not, Representative Roblin?
Yep. It's been a wonderful calling, I think, for both of us as well. And watching kindergarten people work with these kids and giving them the opportunity to go forward is something that's pretty amazing to have the opportunity to do. And then for me at the high school level to have the opportunity to take what has been developed for those years and try to encourage them some more so that they can make good investments in themselves for the future is really important. So it's been a wonderful thing.
And could you state your name for the record?
Arnie Roblin, House District 9, State Representative.
Thank you.
I wanted to read this as I gave it to you, but I also have a couple other comments to make, if I might.
Sure.
We heard in the Head Start testimony and some wonderful, wonderful testimony, but that it's too late by the time they get to kindergarten. I have to disagree with that. These kids are 5 years old. They come to us. They have so limited skills, and I'm particularly talking about the children in poverty. Culture of poverty is completely different than middle class. And the kids are very often developmentally delayed, and we don't give up on them. We work hard as we might to get them to develop their skills and be intellectually challenged. And it's amazing how low the vocabulary is. It's amazing how limited the experience before. Not all of our children go to Head Start. Oftentimes, people learn about assistance they can get when they walk in the doors of a public school at kindergarten. So the job to get the job done in 2.5 hours is really amazing. And when we talk about the Title I schools, and obviously 80% of my school is a Title I school, when we talk about extending kindergarten days for all of those children with Title I money, the other thing I'd ask you to remember is there are many other things we have to do with our Title I money. And in my school, even though we get a good sum of money, it's spread thin by the end of the year. We do after-school programs. We hire assistants. We get people so that we don't have those large classes. Anyway, I just ask you that for your consideration.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Ms. Rowland, because I meant to ask Ms. Robertson that apparently some of the schools in Beaverton that are Title I schools mm-hmm. are providing mm-hmm. extended day kindergarten, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and that's a choice that Coos Bay has not made.
We haven't
not
yet.
Not your school.
No. And to be quite honest, we may have misunderstood a little bit about what our Title I funds are limited to,
okay.
in that we are not to hire full-time staff with the Title I monies, but maybe if you have a half day, you can extend it, and I'll be looking into that more, you can be sure.
Yeah, I think that would be great if you could use the funds for that. Apparently mm-hmm. they are in other districts.
Mm-hmm. Right, so I'll have to see just how that's been done.
I was stunned that you have 60 homeless families in your
yes.
school. How many children are in your school?
Four.
400. And
well, actually, 380.
380, and you have 60. So
yes.
that's a pretty high percentage, about 20%.
So you could imagine the instability in those homes. That doesn't mean they're living out of cars, but it does mean that they're living in a trailer park or with someone other than their own family.
Mm-hmm.
They're living in motels, which cost $700 a month. Because they can't save enough money to put a first and last month's rent down. So, in many ways, I see poverty as being, the key factor in all of this.
Have you, Ms. Roblin, have you seen an increase in the number of homeless students since
yes.
our economy has been
yes.
pretty bad?
Mm-hmm. And particularly on the South Coast, where we've been hit pretty hard.
Right, the fishing industry is
yes.
just
and the
gone to
lumber
nothing.
Industry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any other questions, committee?
Yes.
Senator Morsette and then Senator Eckert.
Several years ago, I toured the South Coast and visited some of the schools in Coos Bay and Coquille and asked the question about how many people do not choose to go to attend the kindergarten because it's not mandatory. Do you have mm-hmm. numbers about how many more people could take advantage of it?
To attend kindergarten?
Yes, kindergarten.
It's my estimation now that everyone who knows about it attends. I don't know of any families who have children who are 5 or 6 years old who are eligible to attend who don't. Now, there may be something we don't know.
May I follow up with that?
Yeah, sure.
Well, the reason I introduced the bill in the first place was because the then superintendent of Springfield School District felt that was a problem, that
mm-hmm.
there were parents who did not mm-hmm. take advantage of it, and they developed bad habits, and
mm-hmm.
he wanted me to introduce a bill that would lower the age from 7 to 5 and so on. But every school superintendent that I talked to said they could handle the increase with
yes.
much of a problem
mm-hmm.
in their existing program if they could get the kids to attend.
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Beckard?
Thank you, Madam
yes.
President. So the natural question, and Representative Roblin, I'd be interested in your answer too, because it's from pre-kindergarten through 12th, is
mm-hmm.
assuming we dig out no new money for out of any program, ESD or otherwise, and that's just a question that's on the table, are you comfortable with slicing out a little bit more for full-day kindergarten that would come out of the budgets of 1st through 12th?
Boy, that's tough. And it's especially tough for us because we've been cutting for 25 years. We haven't had specialists for a long time in the elementary. We haven't had the music specialists and the PE specialists or any of that that other school districts have thought were essential. So it's really hard for me to think of where else we will cut. It's the tough, tough thing.
When you're in a district with declining enrollment and you couple that with the declining resources from the state, it is difficult to make any of those kinds of decisions because every year we're making those decisions about what less will we have the next year. And so it is a difficult one. I think this forces people to think that you're going to have to do full-time kindergarten. I mean, if I was in Coos Bay at the time, I would say if this bill were to pass, you would have to go after full-day kindergarten because you need to get that money. You need to stay in the pool with everybody else to get as much as you can. That's a benefit because I think it would serve the kids that need it. It is going to be a tough one if there are no extra resources for it. And that is the hardest part of this whole process that I'm finding as a new legislator, finding the money that I think really is necessary to provide education at the level we should be is a really difficult task. And I've been looking, because I sit on the other education committee, and I am convinced that the schools in Oregon are doing the best they can with the money they have, but in every case I don't see efficiencies that are going to allow us to do what we should be doing with kids without some more resources. And that means revenue, and that means figuring out how to get the economy so we have the revenue to do those things. Mm-hmm. So it's a tough one.
Mm-hmm. Very.
Thank you. Thank you both for coming.
Thank you.
Well, thank
appreciate
you.
It. And welcome to the Senate.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
All right. Next on our list are a couple of folks from Beaverton, Jada Pearson and Susan Lewis.
They taught me in second grade and in fourth grade.
Could you state your name and your affiliation, please?
Okay. My name is Jada Pearson, and I'm a teacher in the Beaverton School District, and I'm here representing the Beaverton Education Association.
Oh, Chair Walker, members of the committee, my name is Susan Lewis. I'm a member of Beaverton Education Association. I'm currently a kindergarten teacher, and I am in support of Bill 414.
Okay, great. So whoever wants to start?
Okay. Well, I'll begin. I support Senate Bill 414 to increase kindergarten instruction time beyond 2.5 hours a day. As a kindergarten teacher for the past 7 years in Title I schools, I've had a majority of students arrive in my classroom with no preschool experience. Many of these students had not had books read to them or learned any preschool curriculum at home or in a daycare setting. This group of students is at an immediate disadvantage to meet Oregon's first benchmark in the third grade. At the other end of the spectrum, I've had kindergarten students begin the year already reading, writing, and able to perform mathematical computations. Many of their preschool programs are more than 2.5 hours per day. And then there are students who are learning the English language. These are ESL students. We've got kids learning academic language, kids that need special education, or who are our talented and gifted students, our TAG students. Then when you keep in mind that class sizes range between 20 and 25 students in 1 year, about 3 years ago, I had 29 students in my kindergarten classroom, and you think about the fact that I'm expected to teach all of this diverse population in 2.5 hours a day. At the kindergarten level, there are also the social and emotional expectations for students to learn about at school, working with others, and how to control their impulses. Within education, the term for providing for the variety of needs is differentiation. So we differentiate for the student who's learning letters, the student who's learning words, and the student who's learning comprehension skills. We differentiate for the student who's learning to count, learning to recognize numbers, or learning addition concepts. We differentiate for students learning English, learning academic language, or even socially appropriate phrases. When a teacher has this incredible range of academic learning needs to fulfill, time becomes an issue. How do you ensure that all students make progress and all students meet the year-end goals? Then we come to needing to assess the skills. Assessment time is needed to plan for instruction, but the manner of assessment at the kindergarten level is one-to-one, which then robs all the other students of instructional time. And so, again, we're looking at needing more time. While we're asking for more time, and I believe that this bill has asked to extend the kindergarten hours, it has not asked it specifically to be a full day. I have concerns about you know, going all the way to 6.5 hours a day, which is what our first through fifth graders have. This year, I'm teaching first grade, and many of my students are exhausted by the end of the day. Last year, I taught the second part of a full-day program, so I was part of our kindergarten intensive intervention program in Beaverton, where we've used the Title I funding to increase the amount of hours per day. And I can say that by the end of the day, students were, they were exhausted. So when we look at this, we really need to think of it as extended day, not full day. Okay? And then we get into how are we going to pay for this. And I know that that's come up over and over again. And really what we're looking at is an increased need for instructional time, so we'll need more teachers. We could possibly need more classrooms. And we need more supplies. And how are we going to do this? Okay? And what I keep hearing is that the difference is really a 21% increase, or splitting the pie differently. But then there are other ways that we could look at this. We could look at phasing in the amount of time. If we looked at, you know, starting off with just getting the kids to 3 hours a day so it matches many preschool programs, and then after that 3.5 and then 4. If we looked at creative management for these classrooms, where maybe kids have, you cap it at 4 hours, and you have two teachers using one classroom, and they're creatively using that space so that you can use one classroom. And really, when you think about Beaverton, you know, we have a huge infrastructure problem. In the school that I'm in, just since October, we have added a first grade teacher, a second grade teacher, a third grade teacher, and a new art teacher so that everyone can get their playing time. And that person is teaching on the stage. That's where they are. We can't be cited for more portables in our school. It's impossible. So, you know, how do you do that? Is there a way that we can phase this in to make it easier for districts? And that's something that, as you're asking about, how do we do this budget-wise, maybe that's a way that we can think about that. Finally, we need to think about the curriculum and ensure that it's not pushed down first grade curriculum that we're saying, well, we have more time now, so let's have those kids do things that really first graders should be doing. We need to use this time so that kids can get a deeper understanding of the basic skills, that basic foundation, so that when they do go to first grade, they're ready for first grade. Again, teaching first grade this year has been a real eye-opener for me, and seeing that the students really need to wait until they're developmentally ready to learn certain concepts, that we can push it on them as much as we want to in kindergarten, but suddenly they get to first grade and the key turns and they're ready for it, and if they've had a good foundation, then suddenly they're reading. So I guess to sum it all up, with my many years of teaching kindergarten, full day, half day, and now even with this articulation piece of moving to first grade, I have to say that we need more time, and I would be glad to contribute to the Oregon Department of Education's rulemaking process through sharing data and expertise in kindergarten curriculum as we look at making this a law. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pearson. Ms. Lewis?
I am speaking today as a kindergarten teacher, but also as a parent of a five-year-old who will be entering kindergarten this fall. My son currently goes to preschool 15 hours a week. Next year, he'll be going to kindergarten 12 and a half hours a week. That's not enough, and I know that as a parent and as a teacher. I know he's ready for kindergarten because of the time that he's gotten in school now. But next year, he's not going to be given this opportunity of time to get ready for first grade, and I'm worried about that. I have some options, limited options, but there are many parents who don't have any options to what to do. And I'm committed to public schools, and I want my child to remain at his local school. Children come to school with all different abilities and levels of readiness. Both groups benefit from a longer program. The group that comes with no exposure to school or with no support from home needs that extra time at school. And the group that comes already reading and ready to go needs that extra time to delve into subjects further. But at 11:05, they have to stop and they have to go home. I see children who are frustrated in first grade because they can't do the work that their peers can do. And I see children who are frustrated in kindergarten because they want to continue and they want to do more, but the bell rings and they have to put their backpacks on. In 2000, the superintendent of Montgomery Schools in Maryland, Jerry Wiest, I believe his name is, launched a program called Early Success Performance Plan. One of the key elements in this program was that all the schools in his focus groups, and at the time there were 17, had to have an extended day kindergarten. He's had two results from this, which he shared at a conference last year. One of them was that all the low-income students in his full-day kindergarten outperformed the students with the half-day kindergarten, and that included half-day kindergartens that had a more favorable demographic than the low-income students. The other result he found was that the gains that were made in kindergarten, since he followed these kids through third grade at the time last year, they were sustaining those gains. There was also another study done in Topeka, Kansas, and I've detailed that on my written testimony. The results were the same in that impact study. As a good start in school is fundamental to success, both academically and in life. And as a teacher, every year when kindergartners begin, I hear questions from parents asking why we don't offer a longer program. They are entrusting their child's future in us. We can't let the kids down by not offering them more opportunities, as many as we possibly can. Thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Well, just something occurred to me, and it's not really a question, it's just a request for information. I would like to see a comparison of curriculum between full and half day.
Okay.
Just to see what's added, you know, what's fleshed out, that sort of thing. Okay. I think it'd be helpful information.
I can speak specifically to what Beaverton did with their Title I funding. And with the extra 2.5 hours a day, they used that and they split it three ways between reading, writing, and mathematics. So 45 minutes for each of those subject areas. And then within the regular 2.5 hours a day, since there were only select students in that second part, they were getting the extra learning. The main part of the kindergarten day, you had all of the other curriculum expectations. You still did literacy, you still did mathematics, but you did science and social studies and arts and everything.
Okay. Senator Morfett?
Thank you. I guess that kind of boggles my mind a bit, and no wonder the kids are exhausted, because I think kindergarten has to be more than just drill. Mm-hmm. Socialization and fun has to be built into it. That sounds like it's a little overwhelming.
Well, I do have to say that some of the kids were overwhelmed. The teachers who taught that program, we did plan together district-wide and met once a month to make sure that the curriculum was appropriate and that also it was fun. They used the Bridges Math program, which had quite a few math manipulatives, so it made the learning more interesting. But the other piece of that was that only some of the kids attended that extra half day, and all of the kids in their regular classrooms participated in normal kindergarten activities where you were able to do things like housekeeping and puzzles and interactive kinds of games so that they were getting that time. So, but that's where I say, you know, that was 6.5 hours a day, so they were there in the middle of the day too. So I would prefer only 5 hours.
May I make a comment to add on to that? Also, I'd like to add that we all know that there's academic expectations in kindergarten, but the teachers and everybody knows that there's also social and emotional goals that you want for the children too, in addition to academics. And so you don't design your curriculum in your classroom or your school or your district to be all in one area. You have to make it well-rounded for the well-being of the whole child.
Mm-hmm. And I would expect that in the teaching of math and reading and those kinds of things, it is fun and it's mm-hmm. not all just academic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much, and thank you for teaching our children.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Okay, the last person I have on my list is Marcia Kelly.
Thank you, Chair Walker and members of the committee. My name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm a member of the Public Policy Committee for the American Association of University Women of Oregon. I was not planning on testifying today, but the co-chair of the Public Policy Committee is home ill, and she had planned on testifying. When you say kindergarten in Oregon, you have to think about the American Association of University Women, because we worked for probably over 40 years to get kindergarten in the schools to begin with. So when someone was talking about K through 8th grade, it wasn't K through 8th grade. It was 1st through 8th grade because kindergarten was not mandated until the 1970s. And once AUW had gotten that accomplished, we branched out on some of the other things that we came to Salem for. It was interesting, in the 2001 session, I ran into a woman named Barbara Emily Knutson, who endowed the chair in family policy at Oregon State University. She was a 1939 graduate, and one of the things that she told me was she remembered coming to Salem to lobby kindergarten as a young married in, I think, the 1940s. So we do believe in kindergarten, and we believe in kindergarten strongly. Like everyone else, we're concerned about some of the funding issues. We hope that people could be creative. I think that there are some ways that if you look outside the silos of funding, that you might be able to get some funding through other areas, maybe looking at some of the Department of Human Services budgets too, for the employment-related daycare funding. If the kids are in kindergarten rather than being just in a daycare program, you might get some money. Another thing that could happen, if school districts are really interested in doing it, if you have people who are putting their kids in private school because there's kindergarten for a longer period of time, possibly a sliding scale so that, you know, there may be some part of a thing that could be cost recovery for those people who believe in having their kids socialized in classrooms with different socioeconomic groups. It's a tough nut. We just want to go on record of having been one of the organizations advocating for kindergarten for the longest in the state of Oregon, and to know that we'd be willing to engage our members in thinking of creative ways to do funding for importance. Our kids are our future, and the earlier we can get them into healthy learning situations, the more we are going to reap the benefits in the future.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Any questions? Well, I appreciate the tenacity of your organization to keep at it, and it's unfortunate we're in 2005 and we're still at it, but
it's AUW. Actually, this is the first time you've testified this session. It's the 100th anniversary of AUW in Oregon. It was originally founded in Boston in 1881, and we've always been involved in education, positive societal change, and educational equity. But given that long emphasis, we didn't advocate for very much except education and really kindergarten until we got it in the mid-70s. So we spent a lot of time on these marble halls, or my predecessors did.
Thank you very much. Ms. Taylor, this has a subsequent referral to Ways and Revenue, doesn't it?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, it sure does.
I thought so, and I forgot to have you give us the lowdown on the bill before we get started. Colleagues, we don't have a work session scheduled today for this bill. Let me just tell you where I'm thinking of going. I think the evidence today was pretty overwhelming that early education is really important. Do we fund Head Start? Do we fund K-12? I'm not sure. But this does have a referral to revenue. Senator Deckert is getting a number of funding formula bills, correct, Senator?
Correct.
So what I'd like to do is next week put this on the docket for work session and move it over to revenue, and hope that we can get some movement on this bill over in revenue, because that's where it needs to go anyway. And so I just want you all to be thinking about that, to see if you're okay with that, and we'll see what we can do next week. Does anybody have any comments before we close up? Senator Starr, you look like you have something to say.
Well, Senator Deckert and I both have crack at it in revenue, so.
Oh, you're on revenue as well?
That's
well,
right.
Are we lucky or what? I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think it'd be probably okay in their hands.
Well, and I believe our ESD, though, goes to revenue when we're done with it as well. So if there are savings to be had in that program,
As long as the good senator knows he's not going to get that bill next week.
No. We have. I have given you all till March 28th to have that bill back to us in a workable condition. So, colleagues, I appreciate your work again on this committee today, and we will adjourn, and I'll see you on Wednesday.